You're listening to The Zen Courses Show, episode 45. Welcome to The Zen Courses Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, The Zen Courses Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co. What's up, everyone? Thank you for tuning into the Zen Courses Show today. So my guest today is Paul Jarvis. He's a longtime friend. He's a designer. I don't even know how to describe you anymore. Designer.
I don't know either.
Writer, all around creator of great digital products. Paul helps entrepreneurs lead more creative and profitable lives. And we're here to discuss his journey and his course, Chimp Essentials. Paul, welcome to the Zen Courses Show.
Hey, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know I gave a little bit, but how would you succinctly tell people about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I think what you said is pretty on point. I'm an author and a designer who help people at the intersection of creativity and commerce.
Yeah.
So basically helping creative people make money in a way that doesn't make them feel like they want to rip their guts out.
That's always nice.
Yeah.
Cool. And you're still in BC, right? Where are you calling from? You're still in Canada?
Vancouver Island, Canada. So just above Seattle for Americans that don't know Canadian geography.
Cool. Very nice. All right. So I like to start every interview off with the rapid five. Five quick questions to help listeners get to know you. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So this first one might be a little hard because you're an animal person. I'm going to force you to pick between two animals, okay? You ready for this?
Yeah.
Cats or dogs? Which way do you lean?
Dogs.
Oh, so I thought you were going to say cats. See, I just learned something about you. That's cool.
There you go.
Number two, what is your favorite song of all time?
Oh, my goodness. That's a tough one. Yeah. Probably, I don't even, it's bad, but I don't even know the name of it, but I listened to it on repeat. It's by Noah Gunderson. I'm just looking it up on iTunes right now. I think it's called like Ladies Man or Lady Killer or something like that. It's so bad that like I just have it on all the time. I'm pretty sure it's a Heartbreaker. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
Noah Gunderson.
I can see the listens are like in the thousands on that song.
I got to check it out if it's that, you know.
Yeah, you won't remember the name of it, but you may enjoy it.
Cool. Number three, name your go-to comfort food.
Probably curry. Yeah. Spicier the better.
Love some good curry. Thai curry or Indian curry?
Indian curry.
Okay. Have to be specific. Sidebar, Vancouver has some great Indian food. I remember when I was out there.
It is. That's the one thing that I think is the coolest thing about Canada is how we've embraced multiculturalism. So Toronto and Vancouver, even Montreal, have some of the best, like different kinds of foods, I find. Absolutely. So yeah, it's awesome.
The best Thai food I've ever had in my life was in Montreal. Yeah.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
Absolutely. Okay. If you could have one superpower, but no one knew about it, what would it be?
Probably time travel. I think that could be useful.
Okay. You're not going to say
anything. I have no specifics in what, like, oh, I would travel back in time and do this, but I feel like that would be a useful thing to have.
Okay. So the last time someone said time travel, they were like super geeky workaholic. They were like, so I could do more. I could like travel back in time and get more work done. So
exactly. I could probably go back, tell myself, okay, here are the productivity things you need to focus on, 20-year-old Paul.
Right.
Get down to and then maybe look at stocks or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Amazon.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. What is the hardest lesson you have learned as an entrepreneur thus far?
Oh, I've learned so many because I've messed up so many times. Probably the fact that failure is kind of okay. And it means that I'm trying and I'm stretching myself and I'm pushing myself. Whereas if there isn't an opportunity to fail, I'm probably not pushing myself hard enough or far enough, and therefore I'm probably going to get uninterested in what I'm doing fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Now, you were a guest. We were talking about this before we started. You were a guest early on the Zen Courses show. I think you were episode 006. So now, 30 some odd episodes later, what have you been up to? I know that last time we kind of talked about you were just really getting started with courses. And now you've been doing that. You've been working on of course books and some other ventures. Like, tell me what you've been doing for the past year, Paul.
Yeah, so I've been both working on my own online courses, and I've also been working on developing software for courses.
Yeah.
So of course books lets people, it's interesting because the more I got into courses and the more I've been helping people develop courses for many, many years when I was just doing web design. And I found that as technically advanced as online courses have got, there was always this kind of tech bottleneck of workbooks where people were always using PDFs, and PDFs aren't that interactive, as in the teacher, unless the teacher gets the PDF back from a student after they filled it out, they don't know what was written in it. And sharing between students, you have to basically know who the students are and then somehow share it via email or Slack or something. So I came up with Jason Zook and Zach Gilbert, and Zach's also in Chicago.
Yeah.
We came up with a solution where it's basically an interactive PDF workbook that's online. So students can raise their hand, ask their teachers questions. They can share their answers with other students if they so choose. They can keep them private if they want. They can kind of get tracked by their teachers for how much they've done, what answers they've given, what answers they haven't given, which is a great tool for teachers to see, okay, well, this answer really isn't getting asked. Do I really need this, or do I need to word this different, or this is always getting answers, so maybe I can expand upon this, or maybe I can take these answers and make my product a lot better or develop a new product. So it's been really fun. I really like I really like that software.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. So very well entrenched in the online course world, which is,
yeah,
it's good stuff. So we are here to talk about your course, Chimp Essentials, which I think I reached out to you because I migrated from MailChimp to ConvertKit. And you're one of the few people I know who really has mastered MailChimp and you know, has been able to get it to do the things that everybody else complains about.
Exactly.
Including myself, you know, it's a lot of different hacking. So let's talk about your course. Who is it for and what problem does it solve?
Yeah, so the main problem that it solves is the way that MailChimp is set up. It isn't set up for you to use it the most efficient way. So it lets you have the same person across multiple lists. So if you have 1,000 of the same subscribers across 10 lists, you're paying for those people 10 times a month, which is really bad. It doesn't have to be that way. Things like automation and segmentation, MailChimp, and it's funny because I've talked to MailChimp about this. I'm like, if you just made a few of these key things easier to use,
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to make money off of my course. So thank you for that. But right. Two, maybe you should look at fixing these things, because obviously I want people to use their software, because they have, I think, like 12 million users. I think they had,
yeah, they do. They have a lot.
Like 3 or 4 million users in 2016 joined. So they have a big user base. But what I found is that the people who are using MailChimp are only kind of scratching the surface, like just doing a little tiny bit of what MailChimp can offer. Whereas I noticed the way I run MailChimp is I have a very, I guess, sophisticated list that has people segmented based on where they signed up from, what they are interested in, what they purchased, what they haven't purchased, the page that they were on, if they signed up for webinars, if they signed up for all sorts of different things. And based on that, I send them different emails at different times, or I don't send them emails at different times. Like, I'm not going to pitch somebody if they already have a product, mm-hmm, even if they're in the funnel to buy that product. So I created Chimp Essentials to basically teach people how to use MailChimp the way that things like Drip or ConvertKit or ActiveCampaign work, because MailChimp can work that way too. It just needs a little bit of finessing. And the bonus of that is MailChimp has such a massive user base. They have such a big company. They've been around for so long. Their email deliverability is great once things are set up correctly. And there's just bells and whistles. Like, the interface for creating templates is really good, whereas ConvertKit is just like, plain text is great. Mm-hmm. Let's stick with plain text or you code your own. Yeah. Whereas MailChimp, like even for all of my newsletters, and I've been a designer for 20 years, I just use their drag and drop. Like I drag my logo, I change the colors. I'm like, all right, we're done. Yeah. So that's basically the, in a nutshell, what Chimp Essentials is showing people how to get the most, how to basically become a smart email marketer using MailChimp by setting up all of these things in quick and easy lessons. I think the longest lesson in the course is about 7 minutes. So it's meant to be, you want to learn this one thing, yeah. Here it is in the list, watch this 5 to 10 minute lesson, and then you're good to go.
Now I got to play devil's advocate. So why, if MailChimp makes things harder for us online entrepreneurs, why stick with MailChimp? What are the advantages to sticking with MailChimp, taking your course, figuring this stuff out?
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great question. And I mean, I'm not Mr. like MailChimp is the best for every solution. I've told people like use Drip or use ConvertKit or use ActiveCampaign in certain situations because they make the most sense. But I think for a lot of people, if they want to do visual templates, MailChimp hands down has the best drag and drop template creator in the entire world. Their predictive demographics are sometimes good, but they also think I'm a 65-year-old woman. So that's, I think predictive demographics across big data is wrong.
You're saying that's inaccurate?
It's inaccurate, but I think big data across pretty much everything, and predictive data isn't always smart. But I also think for MailChimp's for the checkboxes, I think once you know how it works, it is easy to set up. Like setting up automation sequences are really straightforward. Setting up segments and groups are really straightforward. Once you learn a little bit about something like Zapier or pushing e-commerce data, if you use WooCommerce or Shopify, like the integrations are really, really tight on MailChimp's platform. And even if you get super nerdy like me with programming, there's ways to push data to their API that are far above and beyond most other platforms, with the exception of Drip with API, because Drip's API is really good. So I think just for the most people that use newsletters, if they learn just a little bit about MailChimp, it is more than likely the best platform. But then it also comes down to what platform works the best with your workflow. Like if the way that you think works with ConvertKit better, use that. Like I actually don't, like, yeah, I teach a course on MailChimp, but if somebody uses a different platform and it works for them, don't switch to MailChimp. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, there's enough users on MailChimp to make it worth my while to teach a course on MailChimp.
Yeah.
And if people don't want to use it, then that's cool too. Like, I totally understand.
Yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to personal preference, you know, and what you feel most comfortable with. I mean, in addition to what is going to work for your needs. So I love that you said that. That's pretty much in line with who you are as a person. You know, if it works for you, great. If not, here's something else that might work. Okay, so let's kind of dig into your course a little bit. So you talked about, you know, the lessons. First and foremost, what will your students be able to do after completing the course?
Yeah, so a few of the big key takeaways are email domain authentication, which I'll talk about now. This is like my biggest thing. No, this is like the biggest thing. If you use newsletters, it doesn't matter if you use mail, it doesn't matter what platform you use. If you authenticate your domain name and not just verify it, like in MailChimp, it sends you an email and then you click a link and like, oh, your email is verified. That's step one of two. Most people only do step one, and this counts for MailChimp, ConvertKit, Drip, anything. You also need to set up what is called an SPF and a DKIM record, which requires you to edit two of your DNS records for your domain. So wherever you've registered your domain name, Hover or wherever, GoDaddy, switch off of GoDaddy. But wherever you've registered your domain name, if you change two records, that helps with deliverability by a ton, because that means that other people can't send email pretending to be you, so they can't spoof your email address. Mm-hmm. And a lot of ISPs are actually rolling out requirements for this. So if you do not have your domain name authenticated, your emails aren't going to get through as much. The other added benefits is it displays images automatically in Gmail. You don't have to click, I want to display images for this thing. It Gmail knows that, hey, look, this is authenticated. I'm going to trust the images. I'm just going to load them. It also makes it less likely to show up in spam or promotions. So that's one thing. The other thing, the main thing that people learn from Chimp Essentials is how to create the best funnels that segment people. So automation is great and everybody loves email automation.
Yeah.
But if you don't segment people in and out of those funnels, then you're going to do things like have a 10 email funnel pitching your course and somebody buys on the fifth email and then they get five more emails saying to buy the course.
Right.
You have to be able to take people in and out of your automation sequences and your funnels for them to be really effective. So that's one of the main things that people really learn. There's lots of other things, but the domain name authentication is a big one. And then the setting up funnels that are smarter than just like fire hose funnels is really important.
Cool. Yeah, I literally had to do the domain name authentication like 60 days ago, having deliverability issues. So it's pretty timely that you talked about that. Not a lot, and you're right, not a lot of people know about it. It's a thing.
I get so many newsletters from people, and you can tell as well. The other thing with domain authentication is that you don't get an email from like Paul Jarvis via rbsg.mserve.net. It just says from your email address.
Yeah.
So every time I get an email from somebody that hasn't authenticated their newsletter, I email them. I'm like, just watch this video, please. I want to help. Don't even buy the course. I don't care. Just watch this video. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So those are the two big things that your learners will get out of the course. How's the course structured? How many, lessons or modules? What's it look like inside the course?
Yeah, so there are 36 or so lessons. They are broken down into, I think, six buckets, like setting up your list correctly, learning about segments and groups, learning about automation sequences, learning about e-commerce. And so, there's, I think, between 35 and 36, maybe 39 lessons. I don't know, somewhere between 35 and 40 lessons.
Yeah.
They're all very short and they're all meant to be used as needed. So, I need to learn how to pull people out of an automation sequence based on what they clicked or didn't click in this. I'm going to watch this video, spend 5 minutes learning, pause it where I need to, go into my own account, do the updates, and then I'm good to go. So that's kind of the structure. So there's a lot of lessons, but they're all very short and they're all meant to be like as needed. So as you want to do something, you go watch it, you figure it out, then you do it.
Yeah. Sounds like you've got what we learning nerds call just-in-time learning built into your course. Now, let me ask, there's this big debate on how long lessons should be, right? So what was the driving motivation for you to create these short nuggets versus doing longer lessons that covered a little bit more?
Yeah, so I figured that I kind of thought like, okay, what do people, because some of my other courses have
that's
like
50
to 25 minute lessons. And I think those work when you have to explain the theoretical and then get into the practical. Whereas because Chimp Essentials is technically a technical course,
yeah,
I don't know how to explain why this is needed. I just have to explain, like, why this is needed. This is just what you do.
Yeah.
So for Chimp Essentials, there are a few lessons where I'm talking over slides, but the majority of the lessons is a screencast of me in my MailChimp account showing people exactly what you need to do. And that doesn't need to take more than like 5-ish minutes per thing, because it's like, here's the one thing. If something takes longer than 5 to 10 minutes to set up, it's not a good feature.
Yeah.
But luckily MailChimp, with all their individual features, don't take that long to show.
Yeah. And also, if it takes too long for you to show someone how to do something, then you probably haven't explained it well, or you need to break it up. And I think you're right. Like when you're trying to, I know in my experience, when I've been trying to figure out how to do something and follow along, it's really frustrating if it's like this 15 minute video that I have to watch and then I have to figure out where to go back. So I think you made the right move there.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you. And it's interesting too, because I was hesitant to teach a technical course because all my other courses aren't.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, this isn't going to be fun. I don't know if people are going to want to watch it. So I made like, it's made by me. So it has some humor in it and it has like my weird personality in it. But I actually really liked teaching a technical course.
Yeah.
And I think the main reason why I like teaching it is because I'm seeing so much success from my students. Like every week I get an email from some other student like, oh, I did these lessons or I did these specific lessons and now I've achieved this or this. I was writing a case study today about somebody who took my course and watched the lessons over 2 days, like all of the lessons over 2 days. And he grew his list by almost 5,000 people in a couple months. Wow. I was like, my list doesn't even grow by 5,000 people in 2 months. Yeah. So that's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just, people can just do it and then learn it and then implement it. Yeah. And that's been my favorite part.
I love that. So let's kind of segue. That's a great segue. Let's talk about that success. So how do you build in that action-oriented part? Is it, I know you said you have screencasts. Do you have other elements that are meant to promote action and learning?
Yeah, at the end of every lesson, there's the key things that you can do. Like, now that you've watched this, and it's just a point form summary of like, yeah. Okay, you've watched this lesson on setting up a group, set up this type of group. Then you've accomplished the lesson. And then baked into the course, after somebody bought, I've really found that post-purchase, it's funny because I use so much email marketing in my email marketing course. So the post-purchase funnel is probably one of my favorite funnels that I've built. Mm-hmm. So when somebody buys Chimp Essentials, they start to get drips of emails that are really starting to get them, one, to take action, giving them, it's broken into 6 buckets, like I said. So every week for 6 weeks, they get an email that specifically talks about one bucket.
Gotcha.
And so every single week, so otherwise they might get overwhelmed. And I found that people, even though they have access to, it's not a drip course, it's you just get access to everything.
Yeah.
But because I drip out the lessons, if people want to just focus on one area of their list at a time, then over 6 weeks, that's what they do. And I seem to be getting more traction with people doing the lessons in that regard. And then with purchasing it, I ask them, okay, why did you buy it? What do you hope to get out of it? Throughout the 6 weeks, they get asked some questions. So I'm trying to basically mine for data and get feedback on what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of those 6 weeks, they get an email with a little survey where I can see, okay, where did I fall short? Where did I do well? What have they done? What results have they seen? And then from there, I can start to, one, make the course better, and two, it's a great place to get testimonials and case studies from.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have anything to add. I'm super big on mining for data, and I probably maybe even do it a little bit too much, but like I have these big spreadsheets of feedback and questions. So it sounds like you do the same thing. So you have it automated and set up in your course.
Oh, yeah.
You get those questions. And then what do you do with that information? Do you put it in a spreadsheet and look at it for future improvements? Do you reach back out to your students? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah. So with that data, I do 3 things. So the first is I look for ideas for new lessons, because I always want to be adding new things, because I launch the course 2 or 3 times a year. So I want to always add new relevant things. So I started with not very many lessons, and then I added lessons based on what people were asking me for, which has been really useful. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I look for ways to improve it. So if I start to hear from people that one lesson is difficult to follow or one lesson isn't making sense, then I'm going to go back and redo it and I'm going to make it better. And then the third thing is getting those testimonials and getting those case studies and doing things. So I've done for this course, I've tried to really let my students sell this course for me on my site.
Yeah.
And this I think has been working. And this is, I think, why the course works really well. Cause it's all well and good for the guy who made the course, who makes money on the course, to be like, this is the best course ever. And you're going to learn all this stuff. I'm like, that's easy. I would rather let, because I see so much success from my students, I want them to tell the story. So I have like really in-depth case studies. I've just finished shooting a bunch of video interviews with students. I'm writing more case studies as I go. I have so many testimonials that I'm lucky that I can just pick the best ones that illustrate the point the best. So a lot of that, yeah, I'm trying to let my students show why the course is valuable, because it doesn't, I can say that, but I made the course, so obviously I'm jaded. I would rather them tell the story, and that's really what I've been focused on for the last couple launches. Obviously, the first launch, I couldn't do that.
Right.
All I had was beta testers, so I had to tell the story. But now that I have, I think, like 12,000 students, I get more and more information from them as often as possible. And then I can start to use them, use their words, use their stories to sell it.
You just said a couple of really good things that I want to focus in on. And the first one, I get a lot of questions from people who kind of freak out about the fact that they don't have testimonials, right? When they first launch their course. And the fact of the matter is you may not. You know, how did you work around that? You said you had beta testers. So what is your approach to working around not having testimonials right away?
Yeah, well, beta testing is the one thing that I do that always guarantees that I'm going to get testimonials. And if I don't from my beta testers, that means I need to go back and work on my course before I launch it publicly. Gotcha. So what I do is I'm telling my list about my course for months and months before it's ready, because that's what you should do. You should be getting it in front of people, planting the seeds, and making it so they want the thing, but they can't buy the thing yet.
Yep.
Because then that encourages them to buy it when it's ready. And then of that, I always get people offering to, like, oh, if you need somebody to test this for me. So what I do is I usually find, so I'll do typically a couple rounds of beta testing. So the first round I won't charge for, which is good and bad, but I'll get a couple people to go through my first draft of it. And I like to look for feedback just on general flow of the course. Does this make sense from start to finish? And free beta testers, so it's good because everybody's going to volunteer to do it for free. It's bad because they can't really assign a value to the course because they haven't given you anything for it. And they're less likely to go through it because they haven't given you any money for it. So they're like, oh, I could beta test this, but I didn't pay for it, so whatever. But still, I like to have a couple people go through it for free. Then I have another round of beta testers where I typically charge like a third or a quarter of what the price is going to be. And then there's some value assigned to them. So they're more likely to go through it and provide a lot of feedback. And then as well, they're more likely to feel like it was valuable because they spent their money in buying it. Yeah. And those I tend to get the best testimonials from, if somebody actually pays me for the course that they're beta testing. And then what I'm looking for with them is first, like, obviously the flow of the course, if everything makes sense. But second, I'm looking for how they're onboarded and how they feel about the onboarding. And if I've answered all the questions that they have, because I'm like one person. So if I have a support request from everybody that buys a course, I can't handle that and the course isn't a success for me.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking with the beta testing is not only to get feedback on the course, but to get feedback on how they're onboarded and if they have questions and if I answer everything sufficiently and if they have kind of the marching orders that they need to go from start to finish without having to ask me questions. Because if I get an email or two, like every 100 purchasers, it's totally fine. I can 100% manage that. Mm-hmm. If I get an email or two from everybody that buys something, I don't have the bandwidth to manage. Like, I honestly couldn't deal with that. So I want to make sure that it's as good as possible and it makes as most sense before I launch it to the public, because I do have a decent sized audience that I know people are going to buy it, especially in the first week. So if I get crushed by support requests, then it's not going to be good. I'm just going to be crying in the corner.
Where's Paul? He's off in the corner crying.
Exactly.
And choking.
He looked at his inbox and now he's gone.
But that's really interesting the way you articulate that. I've never heard it articulated that way. So for you, your two rounds of beta testing are really threefold. You know, you have it to identify any issues within the content, to gather testimonials, but also to mitigate your support requests, which that last part is the part that not a lot of people articulate. So interesting. I like it. I like it a lot.
I learned the hard way on that one, so I'm never going to do it again.
Cool. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about validation. So do you believe in validating products before you create them?
To some degree. So obviously, I guess yes, in so much as I'm not going to make a product unless people are asking me to make it.
Gotcha.
But I'm lucky enough that I've worked for a while on my platform and I have an engaged audience on my mailing list where I'm getting asked hundreds of questions a week. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the way that my newsletter is, which I really like. But so I can really see trends and data from that. Whereas if you're just starting out, you're not going to have hundreds of people emailing you. And like I didn't when I was starting out either. That's just how it works. So the way that I like to validate is, one, I'm always listening and noticing what my audience are telling me and saying to me and asking from me, which is really good. The second is I really like to do pre-orders of courses and products that I make, or if it's software, then you can become like a founding member where you buy a software product that's a SaaS one time, you get access forever. And that really shows how interested people are in that. But I think if you're starting out and you don't have like a mass of people asking you questions all the time, I think you could, it's interesting because like statisticians would probably like cringe when I say this, but like, I think any data is statistically relevant based on the size of your audience. So if you have 100 people on your mailing list and 30 people are telling you that they're interested in something, then that's relevant.
Yeah.
If you have 40,000 people on your list and 30 people are telling you something, that's probably not as statistically relevant. So I think that regardless of your audience size, you have to start to listen to what your audience is saying, but also listen to why they're saying it. So, and this kind of harks back to when I was a web designer, like my potential clients would always say, I want to hire you because I want my website to look good. Mm-hmm. And that's never the main goal of anything, even if you love graphic design. Like, you want your website to look good so you can make money and grow your audience.
Yeah.
Those are the real reasons. So you have to pay attention to if people are saying one thing, they might mean something different. And sometimes that requires digging. Like, even with myself, I still do a lot of Skype calls or phone calls or one-on-one emails with my audience to kind of dig past that first layer of I want to, like, the course that I'm working on right now, my newest one, people were telling me one thing, but then as I dug, I realized that they really wanted some, like, the reason they were saying that is because they wanted something else. They just weren't articulating that. Mm-hmm. So I think listening and noticing things is really important for validation. Like, you can validate things by as well. So that's one point. The second thing is that I like to launch my courses as small as possible and then add to them based on data, not based on my own ego and what I think people want. So with Creative Class, the first course that I launched, it had 7 lessons. It started, I think I had like an idea for 30 lessons, which is just, that was awful. It would have taken way too long. So the lessons are like 20, 30 minutes. And so I cut it down to 7 because I was like, okay, this is what I know has to be part of it or the course falls apart. And then as I started to sell it and more people bought it, I started to get like, oh, I really want to know about this. I was like, okay, if enough people are asking about this, I'm going to make a lesson on that. The lessons that I made after launch are way more popular than the first lessons because they're based on data from paying students.
Yeah.
So the type of person that wanted to take my course, wanted to know this information, that's a lesson. And I've noticed that as I relaunch courses and relaunch and relaunch and relaunch, I'm making as much or more money sometimes, like the third launch or the fifth launch. So launching a course one time, you're leaving so much money on the table because the first launch is you guessing at everything because you have to. The second launch is you guessing at a little bit, but having this data to pull from based on what people have bought or not bought or what they're saying about it. And then the fourth and fifth launch, your guesses get smaller and smaller, and the data that can drive your decisions gets greater and greater, which I think is an amazing thing.
Cool. So before we move on, let me ask, because I know this question will come up, how do you encourage people to give you feedback? And kind of tying into testimonials too, do you outright ask them in that onboarding sequence for testimonials or post-buying sequence, I think you called it?
Yeah. So yeah, I thought I would ask most of the time, like I'll have in my sequence, like, are you enjoying the course? And then a simple poll, yes or no. Yeah. If they click yes, then the next email, I'll ask them for a testimonial. If they click no, then I'll send them another email, a branch in my funnel saying like, okay, if this isn't working, let's talk about why this isn't working. So I do a lot of Typeform surveys as well, with yeah. Typeform's a great product. I love it because if you have multiple choice or number questions, you just get a nice pretty graph. If you have long form questions, you can download the spreadsheet and then just kind of pull through it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably the best way. I also send a lot of personal emails. Like if I see, like I've also built a plugin that lets people track their progress through a course on WordPress sites called WP Complete. And so I can see which students haven't gotten very far. And I send them personal emails sometimes, or I'll automate something. If they've only done one lesson in say 30 days, then they'll get an email saying like, hey, I noticed that you haven't logged in or you haven't completed any lessons. Let me know why. Just reply to this email. And every email goes to me if they hit reply. So I try to do as much one-on-one mining for feedback as possible, but sometimes it's not possible just in volume. So I'll automate it and it'll be part of Typeform surveys.
Yeah.
So I try to do a bit of both because, like, I feel like I understand my audience because I talk to them directly. And I feel like data and surveys are going to get you so far, but if you actually have conversations like you and I are having, like with the people who are in your audience who are paying attention to you, if you start paying attention to them, you're going to learn a lot of stuff.
It's really, really easy. It really is.
Yeah.
It's a gold mine. Okay, so you've mentioned automation, and I just realized everybody may not know what that is. So before we keep talking about automation, because I do want to ask some more questions about it, how would you define automation?
So automation is set it and forget it emails. So that means you create an automation sequence on your email platform. And then if somebody does something or signs up for something, they start to get these emails that you aren't sending because you set them up in the past. So for example, and it's funny, people are like, oh, I don't even understand automation. I'm like, I 100% guarantee that you do automation already. You just don't know it. So when somebody signs up for your mailing list, they receive probably two emails. They receive one that's a double opt-in. Please confirm that you want to sign up for this list. That's automation because you didn't send that email. Mm-hmm. You set that up and it automatically sends based on somebody you put their email address in. The second thing that pretty much everybody does is send a final welcome email. So once that confirmation happens, or if it's a single opt-in, they just get this automatically, is the, hey, you've successfully signed up for my list. So everybody does automation. They just might not think of it as automation. So that welcome email or that confirmation then welcome email, everybody does. And if you do it well, which listen to this, is make sure that that welcome email is interesting and that it isn't a stock email, because that email is opened, is going to be the most open email that any person is going to get ever on your mailing list. So your first email that you send somebody is the most important email that you're ever going to send a subscriber, because it's more open. And I think it has something like, I don't have the stat in front of me, but it generates like 371% more revenue than any email you're going to send anybody. And most people have just the stock, like in MailChimp, it's got like a gray background and a white box. It just says, thanks for signing up for our list.
Yeah.
And that's it. Mine is this whole crazy story about getting tattooed and having your name on my arm. Like, it's this crazy story, and then it has a discount for my books and stuff. But like, it works really well. Like, it doesn't even work as it, like, it works well to generate revenue, but it works even better because it gives people a sense of my list and who I am and what kind of emails they're going to get. And if they're in the right place, and if they're not, they unsubscribe, and that's perfectly fine. But I get so many emails from people saying, like, I was not expecting this, or this is amazing. It's been written about in tons of publications. Just because it's like, I spent the time to make it unique to me and my brand. And it pays off. It pays off in spades for my business every single day.
Cool.
Because it's automated.
Why is automation important? You know, I'm building an online business. I've got this email list. Why is this even something that I should care about, Paul?
Because you can't do you can't be paying attention to everything at all times.
Yeah.
So, just to cover a few automation sequences, passing onboarding sequence. So if you have a course and you want to give somebody some sample lessons or a free trial or something, you can create an automation sequence where if they sign up for those free lessons or that sample or that trial, they get maybe a bit of information more about the course. Then in a few days, maybe they get a pitch. In a few days, maybe they get a time-sensitive offer. And all of these things are automated. So every time somebody's interested in your list, you don't have to type out an email like, this is why I think you should take this course. It's just set. So like for creative class, I've had probably, I don't know, 20 or 30,000 people through the free email sequence. And that converts at about 4%. And I just leave it running. And so I'm generating revenue. People can sign if they're in like the Ukraine or they're somewhere in Asia or Australia and they sign up in the middle of the night. I don't have to email them back instantly saying, this is why I think you should take this course. Right. The automation sequence fires. it tells them, it gives them all of this value. It gives them 7 free lessons, I think. And then it gets into pitches. And by the time they get to the pitches, if they found value from those first lessons, then they reciprocate by buying. And that works fairly well for that. So I think automation is great, especially if you work for yourself and you have to plan your time best. And generating leads and doing funnels manually isn't the best use of your time.
Yep. Automation works wonders. And especially coming from you, like, first of all, do you still build sites? You still a designer?
Actually? Not for clients, just for myself. Gotcha. And for my project.
I was going to say, like, you were one of the first people that I met online. And I always remember being in awe of the amount of things that you were doing. And so it's seemingly unrelated. But I think that part of the key is that you're very good at setting up systems, and automation is part of that. So for anyone listening, take heed. Paul knows what he's talking about.
I have no plan. Like, I don't want to hire more people in my business, but my time is finite. So the more I can automate and create systems and processes, the more efficient I can be with all of the work that I have to do. And then I can hopefully have some free time and hopefully make money doing all those things.
Yep.
Automation.
So, absolutely. Right. Automation plug. So before we segue into the final three questions, you talked about, I think you said you offer this course 2 or 3 times a year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
that's right.
Why did you decide on that structure as opposed to making it evergreen or, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So all my other courses prior to Chimp Essentials were evergreen, and they are evergreen, and they work great. So with Chimp Essentials, I realized that in order for this to be a useful course, it has to be up to date, and MailChimp changes their interface and features every few months. So it's really difficult for me to, every time I get an email from MailChimp, like, hey, this feature's changing, I would have to stop everything I'm doing and record a lesson. So I launch it a couple times a year, because the weeks leading up to me launching it, I've gone through and made sure every single lesson is still 100% accurate, because they're all screen flows. So if somebody's looking at my screen on one side, if they're watching my video on one side and have their MailChimp account open, it's going to look identical. All the features, all the buttons, everything's in the same place. That takes a lot of time, Janelle, to do. It's almost like I have
Wait,
to.
Wait, but you have all this automation. You should be able to just if
I could automate me talking over videos, then that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it does take, like, I think last time I had to record 12 of the 30-something videos, because they changed the way their automation sequence works. For setting up automations in MailChimp, which is an interesting segue, what we were just talking about. They made it way better, but that took a long time to redo, because first I had to watch the videos. Okay, this is exactly what I'm teaching. I got to teach this exactly the same, except with these key differences based on how their interface works. So that's why I launch it. Plus, I like that because I have so many other things on the go. When I'm doing a Chimp Essentials launch, I'm just doing, like, Chimp Essentials and MailChimp are my world for the few weeks that I do that a year, which is a lot of fun. And then I can close the doors, I can put the notification list back on the site, and then I just go about working on my other courses and my other software, or writing as much as possible. So it works well for the way that I like to run my business, but it also works well for the course content, where if you can buy it right now, you know this is 100% up to date. Mm-hmm. And then previous students, if they bought it, say, in the spring and it's launching in the fall, then they get that update and they're all happy because
Everybody's
happy. Yeah.
Cool. So we're down to the final three questions. First one is an easy one. What is next for you? Anything exciting coming up?
Yeah, my next course is called Grow Your Audience. And it's funny, talking about systems and processes, it's talking about how to turn marketing from, like, vapid, buzzless, listicle things to do to your website to actually creating a systemized process from start to finish of building products. And that comes out maybe mid-February. I'm beta testing it right now.
Okay.
That comes out, I'm hoping, mid-February. The other thing I'm working on is just another book, because I forgot that I really like to write books, because I've spent a few years just doing courses, and that's fun, but I want to get, I still write all the time. In my newsletter, I write an article every week. So yeah, I'm just getting back into long form, really long form writing by doing another book. So those are the two things I'm working on right now. And then past that, I have no idea. I never know.
Can you tell us what the upcoming book is about?
Yeah, so it's about creating a company that's successful that doesn't involve growth, like not taking VC backing, not hiring mm-hmm. people, not growing it into this massive empire, just working for yourself and making it work over the long term.
I like it. Yeah. Cool.
I'm excited.
I'm excited to read it. I'm definitely going to be checking it out. So where can people find out more about you and your work, Paul?
The best place to find out everything that I'm doing and everything that I know is on my newsletter/podcast, The Sunday Dispatches. So if you just Google Paul Jarvis, it's the first couple pages. So my newsletter and my podcast are essentially the same. Yeah. So if you like listening, go to iTunes, Sunday Dispatches.
Right.
If you like reading, go to Google Sunday Dispatches, Paul Jarvis, and sign up for the mailing list. And it's a weekly thing every single week. I don't miss a and obviously it's on Sunday because it's called the Sunday Dispatches.
Right. Cool. All right, last question. What's your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
Yeah, so I like to help. So I like to help people, and I like to help creative people figure out how they can make a living, like how they can make a long-term living that supports themselves financially and emotionally. But like turning the things that they like to do that they're really good at into a business, because it's not always obvious. So that's why I do things like Creative Class and Chip Essentials. So I want people who are creative to do better, because historically creative people basically just get shit on by business people. And I want creative people to be the business people for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I dig it. Paul, thank you so much. This has been great. And I'm absolutely sure that people are going to get a lot of value out of this. So thank you so much for sharing.
Cool. Thanks, Janelle.
So Paul Jarvis, digital renaissance man. That's the best way I can describe him. He is an amazing person, and he has a great course called Chimp Essentials, which you heard about in that interview. I highly recommend it if you are someone who is using MailChimp and maybe has gotten to a point where you think you've outgrown it and you're considering jumping ship. Check out Paul's course. It opens on February 26, 2017. It reopens, rather. It's open two or three times a year. So definitely check it out. There is a link to the course in the show notes, so you don't have to go any further. You can simply click the link in the show notes. Speaking of the show notes, if you're on your phone, you should see them below or in your podcast app. But if you're on your desktop, you can check out the show notes at zencourses.co/045 for episode 45. zencourses.co/045 and get the link to check out Chimp Essentials as well as the other resources that Paul and I discussed in the interview. All right. My name is Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. It is time for me to get out of here. I will see you next week for the next episode of the Zen Courses Show, where we'll be talking with Holly Wren Spalding about her poetry course. Can't wait to dive into that. So until then, take care.